Hey there, this is Dr. Cassidy Freitas, and you are listening to Holding Space Podcast. Before we dive into today's episode, I just want to name something out loud. If play feels hard for you, you are not alone. Maybe you imagined yourself as the playful parent, crafting, giggling, chasing your kids through the yard, but somewhere along the way, play turned into another thing on the never-ending to-do list, another measure of whether you're doing this parenting thing, quote-unquote, well enough. In the era of intensive parenting, which we are in, even joy can start to feel like pressure. And so in today's conversation, I'm joined by Miriam Sandler of Mother Could. She's an educator, mom of three, and author of Playful by Design. We talk about the guilt, the expectations, the screens, the boredom, and what it actually looks like to reclaim play on your own terms. Miriam is such a breath of fresh air, so let's get into it. You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. Hi, Miriam. Oh my gosh. I am so excited to get a chance to sit with you and just talk about all things play today, because play is tricky. It has been I've had a tricky relationship with play throughout my years of parenting, my over of a decade of parenting with my three kids. And so I cannot wait to pick your brain. This is a long time coming.
It is. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited to chat with you. And what's a better conversation than play, right?
Oh my gosh. It really is. And like, I want to be a playful parent, because yeah. I had a playful parent. My dad, so playful, like, and he still is as a grandfather, and we love that. Like, that's his yeah. legacy. And I oftentimes do talk to him about this, how I want that to be something that yeah. is a legacy to me. So, yeah. you know, my 13-year-old, you know, Gen Z lingo, she's always like, oh my gosh, that's so grandpa coded or so you coded. And like, it's like her lingo. And yes. like, grandpa coded is like, he's like, if there's children, he will be on the ground playing with them. Like, even if we're in a different country, he's on the ground. And sometimes that I have to be like, hey dad, like, the parents are looking at you. And I have to be like to them, like, he's with me. He's
harmless.
Not some old random guy at the playground, like being like playing with your kids, yes. right? Like throwing them up in the air. But it is tricky. And, yeah. and when I've talked to him, he's like, you know, when he was working, he's retired now. When he was working, he was tired. It was a little different. But he was always playful. I really remember yeah. that. And yeah. I want that to be mom coded, that yeah. like mom plays, like, and I also want to make it my own. Maybe I'm not a get on the ground, like jump
that's
on
right.
my back. I'm going to like,
you know. That's like, right. That, and that's really important. I agree. I think there's two things here. One thing is that between our parents' generation and our generation, something giant happened, which was this illusion of mom guilt and parent guilt, right? Our parents yeah. did not feel that and do yeah. not feel that as grandparents.
Yeah.
We feel this tremendous self-inflicted guilt.
It is intensive. It is the era of intensive parenting.
Yes,
right?
It is. Like, very.
100%.
100%. And then two, it's, like you said, making it your own, right? Like, for me, I think one of the biggest misconceptions about me is that I play with my kids all day because I have a kids activity account.
Your brand, right.
So yeah. I understand why. Like, I get it. I'm all rainbows and butterflies. I understand why people would think that. But I don't play with my kids hardly ever. Very intentionally with my kids. And it's 5 to 10 minutes of very intentional, connected time. I'm a mom of three. I work full-time from home. I have a husband. I have household responsibilities. I have my own parents to take care of. Mm-hmm. Like, there is so much going on. I can't drop everything to play. And spoiler alert, I don't like it. I don't like it.
Yes. It is, right? It is hard work. It
yes,
is really
it is
hard
work.
And I will say that at the end of the day, when I was able to tap into my own Cassidy-coded personal brand of playfulness, right, which is different than maybe the next person.
Yes.
At the end of the day, when I lay down in bed, I'm like, oh, that was good. You know,
yes.
Like,
yes.
And so it's
a mom win. It's a small parenting win. And I always say those small parenting wins make such a difference than like doing something grand. Just small little bits and pieces here and there. Mm-hmm. You can have the same feeling as like taking your child to the opera. Like something grand.
Yes, right. Or maybe Disneyland.
I don't know if
my kids
would. Probably not opera.
The opera would be grand to my kids. But yes, 100%. Yes. Okay, so I want to talk about this piece because I know that something that comes up for me is this pressure around the intensive parenting era really like just hooked its little fangs into some of my own personal triggers about achievement and what is quote unquote productive and just perfectionism. And so then play comes into that and it kind of shows up in a similar way. So I would love for you to talk to us about these elements of like quote unquote what is being productive as a parent and like perfectionism and that just like this kind of like achievement oriented mindset that I think intensive parenting really really gets us stuck in.
Yes. I think our definition of success as our generation has changed tremendously, at least from our parents. Our definition of success is like our personal brand almost. Mm-hmm. And that personal brand is that achievement. And as parents, it's bringing in that like, I must play, I must be the best cook. I also must take my child to all their after school activities, must. Mm-hmm. And so you've added so many things to your to-do list that there are so many boundaries set in place that these to-do lists are boundaries, that there's no room to actually play.
Oh my
so
God.
We do the same thing to ourselves and we do it to our children.
Yeah.
So we overschedule ourselves with things to do and we're like, oh my God, if we're so busy, then our child must also be so busy because they don't, what are they gonna do, be bored? No,
that is not
an acceptable answer when honestly, boredom is where creativity is born.
I know it is. It seriously is. My whole brand of my podcast is called Holding Space. I'm working on this book right now where it's really all about space and like space and margins and how important those are in so many different ways. And yet, like, and the reason
it's
I'm writing this is because I live it. I live the challenge of it, of how easy it is to fill up all the space.
Yeah.
Space is scary sometimes.
Yes,
it is. Really, and when it comes to like kids and boredom, right, and why that can feel so tricky is we also now have access to so much other things that could stimulate them, like screens.
And
the minute my kids are bored, it's like, can I go on the iPad? Can I have some time on the Switch? Like, can I watch a show?
Yeah, but I honestly think it's our doing.
Okay, tell me more about that.
I feel like we haven't given them the space to feel what it is like to be in the in-between. Because we have been occupying their spaces in the in-between.
Yeah, I think
so,
you're right.
It's kind of like a mental shift, right? It's like your child is 5 years old. You didn't start from when they were a baby. They're five now. And for 5 years of their childhood, the only way that they know how to live is the way that we've kind of like tailored their childhood. So yeah. It's not that they are innately like, I want to screen. It's that maybe we unconsciously have been filling up their spaces with things to do. And some of those things are screens.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. Yeah, I love the screens. Like, same. Thank goodness. Yes. Like, I'm a better mom when I get that margin of space. And if a screen is what's going to support me getting that margin so I can come back and be a little bit more playful, great.
100%.
But yeah, I hear you on this, right? Like, part of the intensive parenting, right, is like all the best activities and all the things that we can do for our kids.
More is more.
To maximize their experiences. And we're so more attuned to their development, and we want them to have these experiences. And yet there just isn't a ton of margin and space. Okay, so let's say someone's listening and they're interested in these ideas of like creating more space. They want their kids to, oh my gosh, play more independently. Yes. You are the one to go to when it comes to like being playful by design.
That's right.
You're the name of your book coming out here. And so if someone's like, okay, Miriam, like I want this in my life. Mm-hmm. I can resonate with these ideas of like intensive parenting and the feeling of pressure. My kids really struggle with boredom. Like they start whining and that's a trigger for me.
Yeah.
They relate to this. Yes. Where do they start?
I want to start by saying that it's not an overnight shift. It's not like a, hey, here's one tip for all parents, all families, every type of dynamic, and this magic of independent play is going to come into your life. It takes a bit of dynamic and dynamic shift from mentality to your physical spaces. So two things are really important for a child to play independently. One of them is access, and two is freedom. So a lot of times we as parents are the gatekeepers of everything in our home. So I've been there. I have seen the design shows. I have, you know, gone to the container store and bought all the beautiful clear containers and made my shelf look Pinterest perfect. Mm. Except I am the only one who knows where the tape is, where the scissor is, where the paper is, where everything is nicely organized. So yeah. I am the only one who knows where everything is. How does that give anyone else in the home any sort of independence? They have to come to me to ask, which is asking for permission, which means I can say yes or no. Not just where is it? I can say yes or no, show them where it is, which means if I am working or I'm cooking or I'm cleaning or I'm chilling on the couch, I have to get up and go get it. Mm-hmm. And now I'm thinking about what type of mess they're making with the supply that they've asked for.
Ooh, thank you for naming that, because that was like literally where my thought went. Like, not only am I having to get up or stop the flow of something that I'm doing, and maybe a little irritated that I'm having to do that, which comes across in my tone, which then the kid picks up on, is like, well, this is an extra step. And now now you look annoyed and like, this isn't fun.
That's right.
And then I'm worried about the mess, right? Which is going to make me probably hover or like ask them not to do something.
That's
just disrupting the flow.
That's right. And you'll be like, not today, maybe later. Because not only because of the mess, but because you don't want to get up from the couch.
I don't.
So now imagine if you set up your home in a way where things are accessible to everyone, everyone knows where they are, they're age appropriate, and not only do they know where things are, they can go and get it, but they can put it back.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So now we've reduced the part of I'm bugging mom. Yeah. I'm making a giant mess because I know how to utilize these tools. And I know how to put it back. So all of these things have to happen in order to get to the golden child of independent play.
Yeah.
And you can start that as soon as your child is a baby. Where if I'm setting up a play space, let's say I would set up a small shelf in a room or a rolling cart, like something very small, right? And I would put 5 to 7 toys in there, nicely displayed, accessible to the child, and age appropriate. So I always give this example, but I'm not a morning person. I am a night owl.
Mm-hmm.
My third child came to make me a morning person, but she failed. No. She failed miserably. She failed. So when she was like 1 year old, she would wake up really early in the morning. I would take her out of her crib. She's walking now. I give her her bottle. And in my room, I set up a little shelf with literally 4 toys. And she would play while I went back to sleep.
Oh my gosh, yes.
But that gave me peace of mind in many ways. One, she can't leave my room because the door was closed.
And
two, everything that was accessible to her was age appropriate. There was no loose batteries. There was no magnets. There was nothing that could hurt her.
Yeah.
And so she can play independently as a baby toddler. Yes. And I can do my own thing. I didn't have to sit there tired drinking my coffee. Yeah. No.
Yeah. And in your book, are you giving like actually specifically these, like what these toys are?
Yes, I am actually. Okay. Yes, I am. So in the book, I did something really, I would say smart. I did something really smart. And I said, I don't want to give parents, educators, and caregivers specific things to do. I don't want to say, hey, you need to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G in order to get to your final step. Mm-hmm. I want to give you many times lists of questions that you can ask yourself so that you can decide on what A, B, C, D, E, F, G is.
Okay.
And tailor the experience to you. Because if I were to say you need X shelf with these amount of toys and this pen and this, that, that's just going to cause you to go to a store and buy more stuff.
Yeah.
When in reality, you don't need more. You need to cleanse, visualize what you have, and then possibly be like, okay, she suggested an open shelf system for these type of toys. I don't have that. I can go get that. It's one thing. It's not the entire system that you need to go buy.
Okay, thank goodness, because
we don't need more things.
We really don't. Okay, so what about age differences?
Yes.
So for instance, I have a huge age gap between my middle child and my youngest. Yes. He's 10, and BTW, what the heck are 10-year-olds playing with these days that are not a theme? Like, if you have any ideas there, please, I'm all ears.
Yes.
But also then my youngest is 4, and so they have very different needs. But also they can play together, though. Like, if it's the right toy, the right thing, they can.
That's right.
And those are like those golden moments where I'm like, oh, we're doing something right. This is magic.
You're right.
And then they'll start picking on each other or like arguing.
That's just
the way it goes. But love those moments. So when they have age differences, like how are we? Right, like some things for him or he might be able to use, but it might not be safe for her. How are we doing that?
Let's say it's a shared play space. Like in my house, we have a playroom, and I have a 10-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 3-year-old.
Okay.
So there's a 7-year difference between the first and the third.
Yeah.
The way that I set it up was that, first of all, everything in that common play space was safe for the 3-year-old. If my 10-year-old was my 7-year age gap, if she was very interested in, like, let's say small Legos, those live in her bedroom.
Yeah.
Those live in a different space.
Yeah.
But everything in that common space is safe for everybody. Now, that doesn't mean that the 7-year-old toys were the same as the baby toys. So I'm a big fan of open shelf. I love an open shelf because the top of the open shelves could be for that older child.
Yeah.
The middle could be for the middle child. And then the bottom shelf could be for that baby.
Yeah.
And I did the same thing when it comes to like shallow drawers or hanging costume dresses. Everything is thought out in a way where it benefits everybody. My kids love books. So I display books in 3 different ways. I display it on a book wall, which is much more geared towards my oldest and middle child.
Yeah.
And then I have a book rack on a shelf, which is basically like a dish rack with books. Mm-hmm. And those are more like seasonal books where I'll rotate books in and out. And mm-hmm. then I have a book basket where it's on the ground. Mm-hmm. And those are easy for the baby toddler to get.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Hey there. If you are a California, Nevada, or New York based parent, we are accepting new clients. If you reach out to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com, you can learn more about my group private practice that supports millennial parents. If you're struggling with triggers as a parent, anxiety, relationships, boundaries, if you're trying to process a traumatic birth experience, or you're navigating fertility or pregnancy loss, we are here for you. If you are ready to take the next step in getting support with therapy, head to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com. Then click on the contact page and fill out that form. That is you sending an email directly to me. I will follow up with you and I will make sure that you will get connected with the right therapist in our group. And that's me included. We work with both individuals and couples. So if you are ready to take that next step, head to that link in the show notes. I am so excited to connect with you.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
10-year-olds.
Yes.
What the heck are they playing with?
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's like, yes. What are they playing with? And yeah, that there we go.
So interestingly enough, for my 10-year-old's birthday, she asked us for a makeup vanity desk. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I was like, where is this going to go? But this is something that she's interested in. And I think it's really important to show our kids that we are interested in what they are interested
yes,
in.
Absolutely.
So we got her the makeup vanity desk. And she also asked for face paint. And I was like, okay. She creates the most creative makeup looks. And it's not like eyelashes and cheeks.
Right.
It's like cuts with blood on them.
Gosh,
yes. Or she'll turn into like Beetlejuice.
Costume design.
She's costume design. 100%. So she comes home for school. Full disclosure, my kids have full access to the television whenever they want it. It's not a pedestal. It's not like you've earned this. It's you get it whenever you want it. They come from school and they play.
Yeah.
Most of the time. My seven-year-old, the other day she came home from school with this idea of creating a ball pit with magnetic tiles. And I was like, girl, that's going to be a challenge, but go ahead. Yeah. So she literally brought 1,000 of our magnetic tiles into the living room because she needed more space.
Of course.
And that's what she did. My 10-year-old will come home, will sit at her makeup desk and do that. She also loves to draw, so I get her really interesting, like, drawing materials, sketchbooks. I think the most important thing here is to actually be in tune with a child and their interests. Mm-hmm. And it's not your interest as a parent. And I think this is the hardest part. I think we, a lot as parents, try to live vicariously through our kids. So if my dream was to be a really good cheerleader, we force our kids into this cheerleading situation. Yeah. Or we wanted to be good at soccer, but we weren't so good. And we tried, same thing. Yeah. And I love sports. I'm not saying don't put your kids in sports.
Yeah.
I'm just saying maybe they're interested in something else that we're not listening to. Mm. And I think it would be really important to listen to the child, that, especially as they get older, and feed their interests so that there are more options, not just screens.
You're actually reminding me that my 10-year-old son was really into 3D printing for a while.
Yeah.
And then it was like out. But then we had a party at our house, so I put everything away, and now it's out of sight.
Out of mind.
You're just reminding me that, like, that, like, he would come home and he would, like, want to do some 3D printing.
Yeah.
And now it's not, now he doesn't see it, and he hasn't been doing it now for a while.
Yeah.
And so it's, it literally is, we just got to bring it back out, because
bring it back
he'd
out.
Come home and ask to do that.
Yeah.
Right. And, but now he comes home and he's like, can we play Animal Crossing? Which, to be frank, like, I also think that that is an interest of his, that, like, I play with him now.
Yes.
Right.
Like, yes.
And so I just, you know, I don't want people to walk away from this and be like you said, television is not on a pedestal, free access, like, video games and screen time.
It's part of our lives. Technology is not going anywhere. It is not the enemy. Yeah. It is not evil. Yeah. I do think that for some children, at least when we travel, screens, depending on what they watch, is very overstimulating. So if my 3-year-old watches something that is overstimulated and we're on an airplane and all of a sudden she throws the iPad at me, I'm like, what just happened?
Right. Yeah.
And it's okay. Take a breath. Take a moment. Let's reduce the overstimulation and let's get back on track. So in many ways, somebody sent me a message, I think it was like a few days ago, and they literally said, like, I had to put major boundaries on screens during the week because my children were having so many tantrums.
Yeah.
So it's going to depend family by family. And that's what I love about Playful by Design, is that it's not one guide for one family in one home, in one socioeconomic status, in one particular part of the world. It's for everyone, because you're going to answer those questions and make your own guide. And I think that's really cool.
So I have a question. So I'm thinking about my kiddos and, like, a lot of the things that they're, like, when we're not doing screens and, like, they want to play something, a lot of times the games they want to play involve another person.
Yeah.
Right. And so, for instance, my son, he'll want to get outside and, like, play football, tossing the ball around. But, like, he makes up, like, different rules. It's like a game where, like, we're really close to each other. We try to be tossed. And then if we get it, we catch it. We, like, take a step back. Or, like, or we have to do something funny, a funny move, and then catch, right? And he comes with all these little rules. And those are fun times. But also sometimes I can't play with him.
Yeah.
And then that becomes this, like, moment of, like, ugh, like, you know, like he wants to play. He wants to play with me. I can't, maybe because we're getting dinner ready, or, like, you know, I'm folding laundry, or right now I have a broken foot. I can't get outside and do these things, you know. And, like, my 4-year-old, she likes to play board games. And so she'll just be like, Mom, I want to play Candyland. Like, and I'm like, okay, sweetie, I can't right now. Like, and then like the becomes like kind
kills
of just like
you inside.
It does. And so I'm curious how you navigate those moments when, like, I definitely want to prioritize one-on-one time playing with them, but I also need the margins for myself to have the capacity to do that. And so I need to have some boundaries around that. I can't always do it. How do you navigate the, like, moment when it's, like, actually an ask of you, you know, to, like, be 100%. With them? Or they really love the things that incorporate someone else to be there with them.
I think it's twofold. One of them is being proactive. So when you do have that moment in time where you can be with them and play with them, being like, hey, honey, would you like to go play Candyland?
Being the one that initiates.
Being the one that initiates. Yeah. So being proactive in the moments that you do have.
Yeah.
I think that's a really, really, really big step. And two, providing options. So if they're asking you to play, a lot of times when, you know this, when kids ask you to play, it's not the play, it's the connection.
Exactly. Yeah.
So giving them that connection won't mean that they're going to crave it at a later time where you have the opportunity to kind of, like, deny it.
Yeah.
And giving them other options so that when you're not available, there are many options for them to be and to play independently.
I really love that. Thank you for those reminders. And so talk to me a little bit about, like, your idea I want to hear your idea of what it means to be a quote unquote good parent, right? And like how all the work that you've done and like all the parents that you've engaged with, right? And like, I think at the end of the day, I think that really when we're like, when our head hits the pillow and we're reflecting on our day, it's really natural for us as parents to reflect and be like, am I good? You know, and I am the firm believer that like, yeah, you are, you know, and that we need support and that sometimes the things that we're struggling with isn't because of the lack of goodness as a parent, but like the lack of support or lack of space, right? But I want to hear, like, how has your work and all the parents you've engaged with kind of shifted your idea of what it means to be a good parent?
I think prioritizing your children shows that you're a good parent without having to do much. And that is showing up for them, showing that you're interested in what they're interested in, and really being in tune with what's happening in their lives. So that could be, you know, when we have a newborn and we have a baby, they're attached to our hip all the time, right? And a lot of times new moms think that they have to shift their entire lives to because they had a baby, when in reality children can adapt and should adapt to our lives. And bringing them along with us, I have so many parents that are like, I'm never taking my child out to dinner, that sounds like torture. And that to me is a huge life skill opportunity and a bonding opportunity. Is it torturous sometimes to take a 2-3-year-old to a restaurant? 100%, but you're not going to take them to a Michelin restaurant, right? You're going to take them to Denny's.
Like so they're going to Olive Garden.
That is correct. And they're going to love it. Melting Pot, oh my God. They're going to love these places. And it gives them exposure. And it also gives them that life skill. How are they going to learn to behave in a restaurant if they've never been to one? So oftentimes that initial scary moments make us feel like we are bad parents for making decisions when we prioritize them and we prioritize our connection with each other, that can go a really long way in making us feel, because you are a good parent, but it's how we feel about it is really important. So it's one of the things I love about sensory play. And I say this all the time. Sensory play, my mom was a chef, so I grew up in the kitchen with her. That was our moment of connection. I'm not a chef. Surprise. But I love sensory play. I love creating sensory play recipes. And it's something that I can, that is my adult skill that I can bring into my kids' childhood. And we all connect on the same level. And it's not about perfection. It's not about the end result, right? It doesn't have to be the certain color of pink to be the perfect Play-Doh. It's what we make of it. It's the process. So we connect for those 10 minutes. Then they have this open-ended activity where I can set up on the ground, set myself up for success, put a sheet, put the stuff, put the tools, make it fun. And then they can play for 30 minutes. So we filled an hour with connection and play.
I really love a lot of what you said in there. And something that just stood out here at the end was like tapping into like actually what your play superpower might be, right? And like I was saying earlier with my dad, like he'll get on the ground. Like,
that's right.
You know, I mean, I know his knees are starting to not be as strong as they used to be, but like he'll get on the ground and crawl around like he's an animal just with no shame. Like there's... like, and that's sometimes incredible. no like spatial or social awareness either, but that's, we love that for him. It's grandpa coded, as my team would say, like just to not have that awareness or that care, right? Of like that's what people think of him. That might not be my superpower, you know? And as you were, I was thinking about your superpower of like that love for sensory play. And like, that might not be someone else's superpower. They might not love the texture of Play-Doh or like the inside of a pumpkin, like, you know, or whatever
the
case
may be.
And I was thinking about like my superpower, and I think that one of my superpowers actually is, because I'm a therapist, probably like being able to connect a play moment into like knowing something that's going on in my kid's life and like maybe bringing that a little bit into the play just through, you know, utilizing dolls or scenarios or setting up situations like one thing I remember we would play when my 13-year-old was first learning to swim and she was terrified of swimming. We were playing, we played swim lesson where she got to be, and I had the idea, I'm like, how about she gets to be the swim teacher and I'm the scared student. I was up on the couch and the ground was the pool. And like, I was like, I'm too scared. I don't want to go. And she, I was like, you're the swim teacher. You got to help me. And so she like told me just to dip my toe in and like, it gave her, I think, a sense of agency in a situation where she, you know, oftentimes felt like scared and anxious and like something that was still really important that she learned how to do, but that she didn't want to do, but we kind of put, you know, exposing her to.
Yeah, exposing her.
And so I think maybe that's a superpower. And
that
so
is definitely a superpower.
Yeah. Can you think of any others just as for the listener, as they're kind of trying to like explore, like what might be their superpower, right?
Yes. So I think coloring and drawing is a big superpower. Mm-hmm. And this could be for both genders. Because when you sit down, even if you're not talking to each other, if you're both doing the same thing, that is a moment of connection. Yeah. I think sports is also a big superpower. Yeah. My husband loves sports. So his moment of connection sometimes is to kick the ball around with my 3-year-old.
Yeah.
So finding what does interest you, even like I said, cooking interests me. I love it. Mm-hmm. So I turned it into play. Mm-hmm. Something that really interests you in your life. Let's say it's shopping. You love to go to the mall, right? You love that. Mm-hmm. Make it part of play. Make it part of dressing up the Barbies. Make it part of even organizing the Barbies.
Yeah.
Something that you are interested in. Like my daughter, Nicole, she had this moment where she loved to sew. She loved to sew. And so she would sit with my mom, who also loves to sew. And my mom taught her how to do that. Wow. So that was their moment of connection. There's so many things that you can take from your adulthood and bring it down to play. Because at the end of the day, we're all really just big children.
Yeah. Or maybe like when you were maybe theater and like you can like you can like really change up your voices, right?
Yes.
Like or maybe you love to read, or maybe you have like a big imagination and you can really get into like the fantasy of something, like, you know, like searching for fairies or whatever. Okay.
And I think one-on-one time is really, really, really important for my middle child. It is like her love language. I told her like a couple of days ago that we were going on a one-on-one day on Saturday. Every day she's come up with like new things that she wants to do on her one-on-one date. Because she's so excited about
everything. It is everything. Like, if one of my kids is kind of, or like we're just kind of having like, just it's just things have been trickier, whether it's transitions or bedtime or school or just grumpier towards each other. Just setting aside, protecting a one-on-one space is huge, and it looks different for each kid now with like how diverse they're. What era they're in of their life,
right?
Like my 13-year-old, it might just be getting in the car and driving to go get some boba. My 10-year-old, like, you know, it might be pulling me out of school one day to like go, like, you know, go to a Pokemon card store and like just really like dive into that world with him. And, you know, with the 4-year-old, it might just be like, you know, going for a walk with her, or taking her to the park, just me and her. What I'm really gathering is like, really paying attention to their interests.
Yes.
While also holding your own interests.
Yes.
I'm hearing a lot of like the importance of space, like margins for yourself so that you have the capacity to show up, taking initiative on your own, but also space for the kids to play where they can actually visually see the things that are age appropriate and accessible to them. And that at the end of the day, like, it's not about perfection. It's not about performance. It doesn't need to be exactly how the person next to you does it. But it's finding your own sort of you-coded way of playing, and you're a good parent.
The other day, I saw a friend that has, like, 15 and a 17-year-old. And she said that this age of 15 to 18 years old is very tricky because to them, one of the things that they value most is their friendships.
Yeah.
So twice a week, she will text their kids at school and say, hey, invite your friend or two over for dinner today. Just let me know by 3 o'clock. Yeah. And so them together with their friends, they have dinner.
Totally.
And I think that that's a really that was a really interesting point of view. I'm not there yet, but when I get there, I want to be that parent. I want to be that safe space, not only for my kids, but for their friends who are really important to them at that moment in time.
Yeah, we're there. We're there with our 13-year-old for sure.
There you go.
Yeah. I love this so much. Miriam, this has been amazing. Okay, please tell everybody about your book and where they can find you. Yes,
I'll show it to you. I don't know.
Oh my God.
It's so pretty.
It is gorgeous.
Right? Girl. I'm so excited.
Beautiful.
It's available everywhere. Books are sold. Amazon, Walmart, Target, indie bookstores. Support your local bookstores. And you can find playfulbydesign.com, I believe, or mothercood.com, or just search Playful by Design on Google, and it'll give you all the options.
Amazing. I will put all the links in the show notes for the listener to head straight there. Miriam, this was amazing. You are the best. I'm so glad we got a chance to finally do this.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.